Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nullcast. This is the first time we've ever been able to do something in person, so very excited about this. May sound a little bit different because it's a different apparatus, but really excited, Bud. We've got a lot of great questions to go over, and we'll have a good time with this and see where it takes us. So appreciate all the feedback that we've received from people. Have a lot of questions. We've done our best to try to pick out some of the more interesting ones. Not to say that if we didn't read your question, it wasn't a good one. There was a lot of repetition. So we've tried to be as selective as possible, and very excited to see what follows here.
And if we don't include your question today, that does not mean that it's not eligible to be included at a later date. We have a bank of questions we're building because the offseason is long and unforgiving. Show is brought to you tonight, of course, by Louisiana Hot Sauce, and I know Ingram is whipping up something special.
Absolutely. This is it's great for us because we will be able to record a podcast physically in the same room, which is something we've never been able to do. But we're also using it as a opportunity to kind of plan the future of the Nullcast and some of the things that we're doing from a business standpoint. But we're going to record this podcast and have a little dinner, and we will document socially as to how we incorporate Louisiana hot sauce, and pretty excited to show that as well. So thank you always to our friends there. And we would ask that if you have a second, take a look at Twitter. When you hear this, you should see some of the things that we use to put together a little bit of a dinner to look back at where we've been with this podcast and what we'll be doing over the next year or so.
No doubt. All right, so let's get into this. Spring practice is full bore. We got spring game coming up soon. But first, we got to talk a little pro day. I don't think we talked about this last episode. Florida State had its pro day recently, and from all reports, I mean, guys look good. Nobody that I know of showed up and had like a really disappointing day, or had people on Twitter saying, I don't know why this guy's here. Like, he doesn't look good, or, you know, what has he been doing since the combine? Rod Johnson, I know, improved his stock probably because he was able to do some drills at the combine. Remember, he was sick, so that was, you know, good to see. DeMarcus Walker, from all accounts, had a good pro day. Really, you shouldn't have a bad pro day. It's literally, you're playing a home game in your home indoor practice facility. Like, why would you have a bad pro day? Dalvin Cook apparently had a good pro day and then a really good private workout with the Eagles. This is a question that I actually planted. This is not a real reader question. Ingram, how high would DeMarcus Walker have to go in this draft to convince you that coming back was the smart move financially?
It's a great question, Bud, and I don't know immediately where I would say there. I mean, I would like to think that Walker would be able to certainly, if he pulls himself anywhere into the second round, that would be a smart decision because I don't think he would have been there previously. Of all the players who had a productive day as far as their draft status, if you ask me to pick one, it's probably Walker. How much the 40 really dictates into what a defensive end does in gameplay is minimal. But look, when you go and you post a 4.78 or a 4.77, when you're his size, that's incredibly impressive, and that's something that will matter when it comes to the people employed on teams that that play on Sunday. So I think he's done a great job of boosting his stock. He certainly had as productive of a year as possible. But I would, if he goes in the second round, certainly, and even if he goes in the first 10 picks of the third round, I'm not sure that's something that would have happened with him not returning.
It's an interesting response. By the way, he's now qualified to play corner for Florida.
Absolutely. He's faster. Yeah. Yeah.
Because Jalen Tabor running the 4.77 or whatever he ran at his pro day. It is possible I have a bad pro day. Jalen Tabor had one.
Yeah, it is.
I guess my question with Walker is, this year he wasn't being paid. And now, because he came back, he's not going to be able to get paid for another 4 years because you have to get off your rookie contract first. If you're able to move up like 45 picks, I can see it. What we don't know is exactly where he was projected last year. Mm-hmm. I think there's a chance he would have been taken, you know, early third last year. Maybe he's able to get into like the top 45 picks. If he is, then sure, but maybe that makes sense to come back. I guess we'll just have to see. But what is not up for debate is that he did rob himself of 1 year of NFL earnings. The unknown variable here is how much that 1 year of earnings is going to be worth, and whether coming back was the right decision. He definitely had a better year. There's no doubt about that.
Not to besmirch the king, but Peter Warwick, bad pro day. He ran a 4? He also turned in, I think he turned in a 4.65 or something like that. Slipped supposedly, but had a very pedestrian 40, and that was in large part to him falling. What did he fall to, number 4? I think
4 or 5.
Browns,
yeah,
the Browns at 4 or 5. But
no, the Bengals.
The Bengals. You're right. Excuse me. Another Ohio team that doesn't exactly have a track record of a place where you want to go. But Peter Warwick, great guy. We see him a decent amount here in Atlanta, but not somebody that did a whole lot of favors for himself. But we've tried to kind of weave questions from listeners in and kind of throughout this. It won't be just straight, here's comments on football, here's listener questions. So we have some things that we want to talk about from a football standpoint. And we will kind of try to work questions in an organic manner. So the next thing we wanted to talk about, not necessarily a listener question, but you had as many as 20 players that were out of a recent scrimmage. Certainly a little bit of an injury bug has made its way to Tallahassee. And not anything that's going to jeopardize people being prepared to play in August, but something that we should probably comment on and just reflect as to where the team is from a health standpoint.
Yeah, I talked to a source the other day and called him up, and he was like, you know, Jimbo called practice early today. I was like, what? He's like, yeah. He's like, Josh Ball got hurt. Baselli got banged up. Nottie's still out with the calf. He had like a long list of other dudes who had gotten banged up. I do think that they are hitting a lot this spring, and I think that's to foster – an attempt to foster toughness. So the downside is that guys get banged up. Now, there's two downsides with injury. Number one, if it's a serious injury, it can actually impact fall. That's bad. Number two is if you have an injury situation where guys are constantly out, they're not in there getting reps and improving. As a head coach, you have to balance that with the need to toughen this team up. And certainly last year, I think that they thought this team lacked toughness. And I don't disagree with him. Especially early, and especially mental toughness. I don't think these injuries are like real serious long-term injuries. So ultimately, I think I agree with what Fisher's doing here. We'll have to see how many guys are out for the spring game. I know Matthew Thomas missed practice the other day. Jimbo Fisher addressed that by saying he was working on some academic stuff. He had a test to take. I got to tell you, my
Didn't love hearing that.
Did your antenna go up on that?
Yeah. Look, maybe we're just a little bit gun shy of anything that has to do with Thomas not being able to participate. But to hear academics are tied to that, even if he maybe what Fisher said was absolutely correct. He just needed to take a test or catch up on something that he had missed. But anytime Matthew Thomas is not out there and the response is something tied to academics, that is a bit disconcerting, absolutely.
Now, luckily, as far as we know, he hasn't been missing like a bunch of days. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt here that this was, you know, like he had to go take a test for a spring class. That's fine. That definitely happens. We've seen guys have to do that before. I agree with you. Anytime it's academics and Matthew Thomas in the same sentence, I'm on high alert.
Yep. The only injury so far that we know somebody will be out is Derek Nottie. No, not anything that we need to evaluate or take from Nottie's game. That's a calf injury that I think will be 2 weeks or so. So if that's the worst of it, then Florida State's in a good place. Just a lot of you know, bumps, bruises, dings. JJ Costantino got lit up pretty well or pretty significantly if you listen to what's out there. The fact that JJ Constantino even got hit is surprising to an extent because it means that you let your quarterbacks go live, which is also another indicator of the toughness that you mentioned that's tried to be fostered. So something that we'll look at and something that's somewhat tied to the next point that we want to make. Bud, a guy that I've been positive about and excited to see join the program, Atlanta product here, Bailey Hawkman has certainly drawn a lot of positive reviews, and it's been something that a lot of people have spoken of, both you know, kind of off the record and directly to us in the first week or so or 10 days of practice. That's a good thing. That's a great thing. I wonder how much of it is based off him being compared to some other less than stellar products that are currently on the roster.
Well, probably some, because we know there's at least one product that is maybe not the most stellar on the roster. And, you know, we're fond of saying, hey, like, this guy doesn't suck, right? He would play a lot of other places. I'm not so sure how true that is with Costantino. Not saying he sucks, but I'm saying, like, I don't know that he would be the starter at a lot of other FBS schools. I'm not convinced of that. I think there's a realistic chance that Hockman comes in and takes that backup spot.
Yeah.
That's encouraging, I guess.
Fundamentally sound kid, coach's son, played at McEachern, which is one of the better schools traditionally in Georgia. I believe his grandfather was a coach as well. He's from the game, of the game. Doesn't surprise me that he's showing well. Certainly of the two quarterbacks that Florida State signed, he was the much more ready product, polished product. So Hockman, excited for him. Great to hear. But I will somewhat
you know, temper that enthusiasm.
Temper it a little bit, because I think it's a little bit of a product or a byproduct of him being compared to JJ and another kid who's raw, very talented but raw. So I think Hockman is. It doesn't surprise me that he's stood out amongst his peers so far.
We have a good question now from Gerald Bowens. He asks, "How are the effort?" Jersey colors of garnet, white, and orange going to work, since the offense normally wears garnet and the defense normally wears white in practice? That's actually a really good question, Gerald. So I appreciate you asking that, and you can send all questions to thenolcast@gmail.com. We collect them all there. You can also hit us up on Twitter. Success rate on Twitter might, you know, we generally get to them, I would say. But email is just easier to kind of collect everything. And the answer is this. Those jersey colors are really more for, like, off-season conditioning, right? When you're out there in the sun, sweating, and you're working with your boys. In practice, they don't want to have guys wearing all million different color jerseys for the most part. Now, I'm not saying that they won't put them on there if ever it becomes, like, a real issue, but that's more of an off-season motivational tactic, something that guys will wear either on days when they're not in full pads. What you don't want to have is, if you are going full contact and you are going pads, then you want your quarterback to be able to identify who's on his team. And you want everybody else to see that too. So that is important.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you don't want your quarterback to have to mentally try to clarify, you know, which receiver is actually his, because you have three different receivers wearing three different colors. My understanding of that was that it was as Bud said, not to be repetitive, but more it was going to be reflective of what you put in the offseason, and then shortly thereafter, everybody would go back to their traditional jerseys. So if that's not the case, I would be surprised, but that was my understanding as to how the effort and colors tied to them were going to work from the offseason. Barry Ripley, Mr. Ripley writes, "I know it's Alabama, and they're in the league by themselves, but I saw they hired Chris Winkie. What is the deal with FSU not upgrading the coaching staff? I think most of them are good, excluding Miller, but I think we need some new blood." All right, Barry, thank you. Thank you for your candor.
You want to take this one, or do you want me to, or what are we doing?
Yeah, I'll start off. First of all, I will say that I'm a little surprised there's not a change. I was, you know, certainly sources are not infallible, but I was told by somebody whose opinion I value as much as possible, either in the days leading up to signing day or the 3 or 4 days immediately after signing day, that they expected one person, or not necessarily Miller, but they expected one change would occur on the coaching staff, possibly two, but one. I think some of this might have been tied to the NCAA rule, and there was a general understanding or an assumption that it would be enacted immediately and people would have an ability to plus one their staff. But also in the conversation that I had with him, that was not necessarily tied to it. So there was a period of time where I think Florida State was going to make a change on its staff. That does not appear to be the case anymore. That is surprising to me. I don't know... I would take the Alabama comparison out just because it's not really apples to oranges if you're talking about hiring Winkie and then getting rid of a position coach. I will say that Florida State certainly upgraded their staff with the addition of Damian Craig. That's a good step forward, and that's you know, that's using resources for a non-traditional staff or a non-traditional staff appointment. But I don't know. I am a little surprised, and if it were up to me, I would like to see at least a little bit of turnover from what you saw last year.
You know, it's specifically as to Winkie. I got to be careful how I say this. In 2013, Florida State had a coach opening. It was for quarterback coach because Damian Craig left FSU for Auburn. They hired Randy Sanders, and they hired him. I don't think a whole lot of interviews were conducted for that. And I'm not sure that everybody who wanted to be considered for that position was actually considered for that position. You catch my drift?
I believe that you're saying that maybe they had a chance to hire Winkie previously and decided not to.
So I don't know that yes, and I'm not sure that went over all that well. He ended up with the Rams, which is actually a better gig to be in the NFL.
Right.
Unfortunately, the Rams staff was not very good, and they lost a lot of ball games and got fired.
I admire Winkie. I admire, you know, I don't know what Winkie's finances are. I know that when he went to Florida State, he was fairly well off. He had invested his money, by all accounts, pretty well from what he took from baseball, and certainly made a little bit of money playing on Sunday. I don't know that, you know, he made himself generationally wealthy, but he's shown a hell of a lot of effort, and he's shown a lot of desire that some professional players don't show when it comes to moving up the coaching ladder. I mean, he's done the he's certainly, you know, he's worked his way up. He's gone from high school, he's gone to the pros, he's gone to college, he's now gone to kind of the program in college football. So I admire Winkie's ability to work and work in different places. It'll be interesting to see how he does in Alabama, but it's a guy that very much appears that he wants to coach at the highest level and maybe be a head coach someday. So I don't expect him to be anywhere for too long. But, you know, good on Alabama. They certainly have put another piece in place, and interesting to see how they use him.
You know, specifically Winkie when he was at IMG, the ability to handle all the responsibilities that he had, I think, was really impressive. And to exemplify this, pretty sure he would often stay in the trailer there on IMG's campus back when they were building. Because remember, nowadays they have a director of football ops and a head coach at IMG.
Of course they do.
Back in the day, right, which you actually need because they have like 50 FBS kids on that roster.
Right.
Back in the day, Winkie actually did both duties and was working himself to death. I mean, just one of the busiest guys you would ever meet.
He's got a work ethic.
So. Right, that's what I'm saying. The willingness to take on a lot of responsibility and to do a lot of things is there. I you know, it wouldn't surprise me if someday he does become a coach somewhere. He's not actually a coach at Alabama. He's one of those
he's part of the shadow staff.
He's analyzing, right?
Yeah,
doing some analyst role.
He is good. It's a nice place to have at Alabama to be able to stash somebody like Winkie to do not off the record or off the books work, but work that you would otherwise not be able to have at many other places. They also just added Ole Miss's offensive coordinator.
So I saw that.
That's you know, they're not lacking for hands on deck by any means.
I mean, that's he's done a good job. The Ole Miss offensive coordinator has done a pretty good job of sort of creating chaos and causing Alabama some trouble.
Yeah.
When most teams are not able to do that. I think it's just because of how unpredictable they are. When it works, it's beautiful. When it doesn't, it looks like garbage.
Right. So Bear Bryant used to sign just a asinine amount of kids all the time. And his strategy was, hell, I'll sign them. They may never play for me, but I won't have to play against them. Saban, in the modern day iteration of it, appears to be, hell, I'll hire him, means I won't have to coach against him. So it's good for him for channeling his inner Bear there. And I mean, Alabama, we could do a 60-minute podcast on what Alabama's doing, what Alabama's done, and how they've changed the landscape, the coaching landscape in particular. But that's just two more additions to that, with the addition of Ole Miss's offensive coordinator and Winkie, as we just discussed. But we have two more questions, or two questions from the same individual. This is from Clarence. Clarence, if I'm mispronouncing your name, I apologize. His first question comes directed at George Campbell, and he says he keeps reading about Campbell's core injury, and makes a point that he's missed an awful amount, an awful lot of practice, a decent number of spring practices, and how many practices he's missed in general over his first 2 years. At what point does Clarence ask, at what point do we begin to scale back expectations for Campbell?
We need a name for this. Like, we need a name for, like, the – maybe we'll call it the show me zone, right? Like, Campbell's officially now in the show me zone, to where we don't really get to talk about what he could be until he actually shows anything. Like, I'm going to need you to show me a flash before I can talk about about how good you can be now. Because it's been a couple of years since Campbell's done anything. Now, and that's really going back to high school. Is it his fault that he's always injured? No, I have no reason to believe so. I don't think he keeps himself in poor condition. Mm-hmm. I don't think he doesn't take care of himself. As far as I know, all the injuries are football related, so he's not out doing dumb stuff like, I don't know, chainsaws on a trampoline or some nonsense like that. Some guys just get hurt, and he's had a couple injuries, a couple of them that are fairly more serious. As far as I know, it hasn't lessened his football ability. It has certainly hampered his development quite a bit. I think Campbell is going to be in the show-me zone, right? We're not going to count on him to do anything until he shows us that he can do a little bit first. But, yeah, what do you think his practice rate has been over his career? Under half, right?
I was going to say somewhere between 35% and 45%.
Yeah.
It's disappointing. Campbell, certainly all the talent in the world, but you're right. I'm sitting here looking at you, pretty confident you made that up on the fly. Doesn't surprise me, bud. But that is well done, and I think we will roll with the show me zone moving forward, and Campbell is our first member of that group. Clarence follows up with a second question, and that is asking about the defensive tackle position moving forward. As it stands, I like our 2-deep, and I think it may be one of the best in the nation. But after this season, we might lose a lot of talent. Naughty, Fred Jones, Christmas, Wally Aim. What are you hearing about guys like Darvin Taylor, Cedric Wood, Adam Torres, and Arthur Williams? I would hate to have to rely on Marvin Wilson too much too soon.
I think we both have thoughts on this one. I'll start. I think there's a chance they get something out of Darvin Taylor and Cedric Wood. I mean, those are guys who they look like players physically. Mm-hmm. They've battled injury. I don't know how many snaps they're going to play this year, but I like being able to say, have guys who are in their third year who are highly rated dudes ready to roll in. I like the depth they have there. Now, Adam Torres, I have no idea if they're ever going to get anything out of Torres, or if he's even going to be here next year. Arthur Williams, you take a guy like Arthur Williams because he has the potential to turn into something. Now, if he had the potential to turn into something, and also the extremely high likelihood to turn into something,
right,
he would have been rated 5 stars and not 3. The reason why he was a 3-star was because the range of possible outcomes on his career was as wide as can be, because he was very raw, didn't have a whole lot of football experience and had some things to work on in his game. I actually think that I wonder if he doesn't play a little offense, by the way, at some point. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a change of position can actually help somebody. So I wonder if they don't look at their depth chart defensively, especially when the guys get here this summer, and they say, you ever thought of playing offense? Offense is fun. Let's do some offense.
Playing is fun. Mm-hmm. That's what's fun. there's been some talk about Williams maybe taking some snaps. I believe offensive guard would be the place where you might see him. But look, there's a reason you signed the two kids out of Gainesville and Wilson last year, and that is because you may need them. There's questions about what you have. Ultimately, I have a lot of faith in Odell. I think that he'll get one or two of the guys that you mentioned there, Clarence, ready, and they'll be able to contribute. But look, you signed Parks, you signed Durden, and certainly you signed Marvin Wilson for a reason. And it wouldn't surprise me if you didn't see all three at some point in 2018.
And you know those guys you just signed have to like their chances of playing. That's one of the reasons they signed them.
Right, absolutely.
Right? Like,
absolutely.
You can't go into Marvin Wilson's living room and say, Marvin, we have tremendous depth here on the defensive tackle spot. And so we are not going to be able to offer you real playing time until 2019. Yeah. He's going to be like, man, I love Boudin. I'm going to Baton Rouge. Right? So, no, that's not going to happen. I think they'll be fine at defensive tackle. It may take a small step back in 2018 because they do lose an awful lot. But, look, you don't have peaks without valleys. Brian Anderson asks, how much better does FSU's passing game have to become to win a national title? You mentioned Francois's 47% against ranked teams, but you think numbers against ranked teams would be lower. Makes sense. What do QBs who take home hardware typically do against these opponents?
How much better does Florida State's passing have to be to win a national title? That's a tough question to answer if you're looking for me to give you an exact percentage or anything like that. I would say that, and we certainly talked about Francois's accuracy a decent amount recently and spent a little bit of time on the most recent podcast discussing that. I think if you see Francois is able to get up to maybe 60%, and absent the play he made against Michigan in the Orange Bowl, one of the reasons why that stands out so much is because, one, it put them right back in the game, but two, it was really one of the only times he made a horrendous decision tied to turnovers. So if you're able to keep the decision-making, if you're able to avoid the turnovers and really killer game-changing turnovers, that I think if you're able to have a quarterback hover around 60%, I don't know if that's your recipe for a national title, but that's your recipe for getting as much as a reasonable expectation out of the offense, in my opinion.
I think you hit it on the head right there. Look, Francois sometimes does take too long to figure out where to throw the ball. And oftentimes he doesn't throw it there all that accurately, as we saw, 47%. Against five ranked teams is horrendous. But you're absolutely right that he typically doesn't make the wrong decision. There's taking too long to read a defense, and then there's reading the defense incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
And he typically falls in the former category. He usually reads it correct. He's not, like, bad at reading it. He's just not quick enough at reading it, which I would rather have that than somebody who misreads it, trust the misread, and then fires, because that's a great way to throw a lot of interceptions. And one thing Francois deserves a lot of credit for last year, and I know he had some drop picks, so I think his interception rate will spike some this year, just because of regression to the mean. But interception avoidance was a key thing. And now since Ingram has been stalling, I actually found the numbers. Here is the completion percentage of the national championship quarterbacks of this past decade against ranked teams. Remember, Francois was 47%. This is since 2010. 64%. 66%. 60. 60 again. 61. 68. 66. All those numbers against ranked teams have a trend. And that is that they start with six.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're exactly right. That you got to get there. I think for this team to have any sort of shot at winning a national title, you got to get at least – you got to get north of 55, right? I mean, I'm willing to accept that you can win as an outlier. You may not have to get to 60, although history recently says you have to, but I don't think you can do it at like 53 or 54. You know, you need to complete probably closer to 60 than 50.
Not on the sheet, bud, but like national titles, is it really something that we should even really associate with this team? I don't – You're traveling to Clemson. I want to remind people of that. I don't know that that's really something that we should even discuss with this team currently. You're playing the best team in the country to start. You're traveling to one of the top two or three programs in the country. Obviously, you always play Miami and Florida. Done pretty damn well against them recently, but still have to play them. I don't know that you have a roster to really entertain a whole lot of national championship conversation. You may have a defense to do that, but I think for me personally, I think this more sets up as a year that you reestablish yourself in the conference and you go from there. I'm hesitant to have a whole lot of national title talk with this team until you're able to have a little bit more of a sound footing on the offensive side of the ball.
You know, that's a really good point, and I think I'm going to have some natural disagreement here, which users say or listeners say we need to have more of.
Good.
And that's this. If you don't include Florida State in the national championship talk, how small is your national championship circle?
That's more, I don't know if a complaint, but that's more, in my opinion, more a reflection as to where college football is.
I mean, are you just Ohio State, Bama, and that's it?
I don't know that I would put Clemson in there, but I would put Clemson in there solely because they have the belt currently. Look, if I want to be critical of Florida State's national championship opportunities because of what they have to replace, then I can't sit here and tell you the same thing about Clemson. But they are the reigning national champion. But, yeah, the pool is small. I mean, look, there's only so many schools that have the geographic ability to recruit the kids that are necessary to play at the highest level. There's only that pool is thinned even further. There's only so many schools that have the resources to do that. And bizarrely enough, you're seeing a greater amount of parity as a whole, but you're seeing what I feel is a greater amount of elite concentration of talent. And the super elite in college football are kind of distancing themselves from that second class of schools and programs. So
I agree with that.
I think the conversation is small. I don't know that that's necessarily Florida State, a reflection of Florida State. I think that's more a reflection as to where college football has moved over the past 5 or 8 years.
I totally agree with that because if you look at like last year's recruiting class rankings, right, the top three classes – from last year, which was Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, would have been number one in a lot of other years. Like right. Georgia's number three class would have been number one, I think, in like half of the previous 10 years, which is really impressive. Now, I think the way to frame this is I don't think national championship or bust should be the expectation for this year's team. But if you list down teams that you had to pick to win the national championship, as far as likelihood, you're getting to Florida State pretty quickly, I think, just because there's a certain baseline talent level. So to me, when I look at national championship contenders, it's do you have like the requisite minimum talent level to get there? And then do you have any issues that are like just so overbearing, like, I don't know, in the midst of a ridiculous NCAA scandal or, you know, crazy youth like Ohio State had last year or something, to where you really don't think you can win it realistically. Now, if the answer to both those is no, and I think the answer to both the doubting questions and FSU is no, then you have to include them as a national title contender until proven otherwise. What I don't necessarily think they are is like, they're going to be rated the number two team in the country this year,
right?
To start, probably. I don't know if they're the number two team in the country. Maybe they will be. College football is very hard to predict. But you're right in bringing up that a lot of people think because they didn't do it last year that this year is going to be the year. And I contend last year was a huge missed opportunity and one of the worst coaching jobs that this staff has done. A good finish does not erase the terrible start. It brings it back to kind of average level.
Mm-hmm.
But they're certainly a contender for it. Because otherwise, I guess USC. But I just heard Bruce Feldman say on his podcast that he doesn't think USC defensively up front looks like a Bama or an LSU or a Clemson or Florida State. And he just went out to their practice. And I trust Bruce because he lives out there in L.A. Penn State, I guess, but I don't think so. I think they're probably a year away recruiting-wise. I don't know who else. I mean, FSU's and the other thing with the playoff, you're still in the conversation with the loss.
Right.
In the BCS era, you weren't. I mean, if we're in a BCS era and Florida State had this schedule and they lose to Bama to start it, well, you know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably out of it.
We'll see. Again, I don't mean to derail us, but
that's natural conversation.
Part of Brian's question of next question comes from Alexander Wilkes. Alexander asks, with the struggles the Noles defense have had in recent past, what will be implemented in order to best defend highly mobile quarterbacks like Bama's Hurts or Louisville's Jackson? But I think you're the perfect person to answer this question.
Oh, my God. All right, look. Number one, they really – I don't think Florida State struggles with mobile quarterbacks so significantly more than other top defenses do. The bottom line is that mobile quarterbacks are a huge advantage in college football as opposed to the NFL, because you don't have guys that run around in the NFL quite so much because they have to invest so much money in them that franchises don't want those guys getting hurt, because then it kills like their marketing opportunities and their ticket sales, as opposed to college that just doesn't exist. I do think that there's an element of FSU's fans' perception of this that is essentially tied to, we must be so bad at stopping the running quarterback because our own team, like other defenses, never let our kid run wild, right? When in fact, we just don't use the mobile quarterback. We don't do that. We're one of the most pro-style, old-school offenses in the country. I do think there are a couple of elements here, right? With the RPO game taking over college football and the way that it's officiated. And actually, I don't know if I told you this, but I like NFL more than I like college now, just because of how it's officiated. Right. I think it's just – I don't like watching college football anymore as much, just because you got guys releasing downfield 3 and 4 yards. Every team out there, if they're willing to just RPO and release, is creating offense almost regardless of talent, right? In the NFL, that doesn't fly. You can't just the defense can't be wrong on every play. But there are different ways to defend some of the RPO stuff. Traditionally, a lot of defenses key on movements of the guards, movements of the offensive line, movements of the back. What you're going to have to start and see here is that, and you're seeing some teams do this, and I'm guessing that FSU staff will probably go visit other places as well, and they already do some of this, so I don't want to make it sound like they're not doing this at all, but you're going to have to start reading runner pass not based on what the offensive line is doing quite as much.
Exactly. You can't key the guards nearly as much, and that historically has been your whole way to read a defense. I don't mean to interrupt you, but you can't – your key to reading a defense can no longer be what the first step of the guard does. You're going to have to completely change the way that you look at and the way that you set up your own individual keys, particularly if you're a linebacker or a safety for that matter.
Absolutely. And so you're going to have to, number one, you're going to have to start reading like receivers and tight ends more and see how they come off the line, because a lot of times that is a tell. And you also have to mix up your keys. You cannot have – this is something Georgia Tech has done very well under Paul Johnson, and always, and even back when he was at Navy, he would figure out what the defense was keying, and then he would change that up just ever so slightly to make the defense very wrong on the next play. He did that brilliantly, by the way, in 2008, 2009 against FSU. I don't know if you recall those games. Those were, 08, 09.
Yeah, man. I was there. I was there The Marcus Sims game still bothers me deep to my core, but that's just part of being a college football fan. To address his question about individual, I mean, look, what they do with Hurts will be interesting. A couple teams have given you a decent little blueprint there. Jackson of Louisville, if the entirety defense doesn't look like it, it's the West Canaan Coyotes that have spent the night out with their substitute teacher at the strip club. That'd be fantastic. That's a Varsity Blues reference for those out there. The other thing that would be a great help is to have a healthy Derek Naughty. I mean, Derek Naughty, if you watch him in the Louisville game, you would not be able to convince me he's the same player who finished out the back half of the season. So by no means is that going to be a panacea. Is that going to cure all your problems that you have with stopping that offense from a defensive perspective? But there's some simple little things that you can do to help with Louisville, and having a healthy interior is certainly the first step.
Now, let me ask you this. Who was FSU's most mobile backup last year?
On their roster, you're asking?
Yeah, on FSU's roster.
Damn, man. Maybe that walk-on from Aquinas? I have no idea.
Who's not
right? Who's not really somebody that you should have to give that as an answer?
Hockman's pretty athletic.
Hockman is
he's not like a track star, but he's got moves.
He is pretty athletic. He's pretty fluid. And one of my larger complaints, not to get on a soapbox here, but one of my larger complaints in sports, in particular, or sports across the board, is that athleticism has come to basically mean how fast are you, which is not the case at all. There's a ton of things that goes into being an athlete, and Hawkman certainly has great hand-eye coordination, multiple sport athlete. At the very least, now, if he's your true number two, how much he'll be running with a scout team, I don't know. But at the very least, you have an option, and certainly the kid out of the Glades will give you a much, you know, light years of a better look than anybody could have on the roster last year, which is a really good point.
And I think Hawkman actually is quicker than Blackman. Like, Blackman might have better top-end speed, but I don't know that Blackman has quite the moves that – I mean, Hawkman is very, like
shifty.
Like, ponderish, agile. Yeah. Maybe my point with where I'm going with this, and I think you kind of alluded to it, who gave them a good look last year of a mobile quarterback who could threaten them? Costantino? I mean, come on. Like, they didn't have anybody on that roster who was, like, super mobile and a good QB. I think that this year they're going to have a – whether it's Blackman, whether it's Hawkman, whether it's both at times running some scout team stuff, I think they'll get better looks at that this year, which, you know, the Louisville game to me needs to be separated somewhat from the overall issues with mobile quarterbacks, because Louisville was kind of a perfect storm. You have who I think is the best offensive coach in this conference, Petrino, and just has at times made just ruined like Saban and good coordinators for everybody.
He's an NFL mind coaching on Saturdays.
And he's definitely really brilliant. I do ultimately wish that I could have seen what he did with Mike Vick, which is where he talked about his motivations for going more mobile QB. He's like, you know, that's just something I always had planned, and then the whole dogbite thing happened. Even though he kind of weaseled his way off to Arkansas after that. Anyway, you have to separate the Louisville game. I mean, look, Josh Sweat was hurt for that. Remember, we were like on Josh Sweat alert. Was he going to play? Nottie was much more hurt than we realized. You had you just lost Derwin.
Right.
It was kind of like, I'm not saying that that's your entire defense, but those are three of your more talented guys on the defense who are definitely going to be playing on Sundays. You have to separate the Louisville disaster from the overall mobile quarterback issue, because not every team was putting up 63 points on these guys. And not every mobile quarterback ripped them. But you're right, and then I do want to see how this team does against a more mobile quarterback, against a spread attack. Because, look, you know that's what Alabama's going to try to do. Their quarterback is not a great thrower. Neither is FSU's, by the way. I expect Alabama is going to try to not ask that kid to throw a lot, as opposed to, you know, what they'll do in Tallahassee, which is still trying to make him a pro-style quarterback. All right, what we got next here?
We have three questions from Mitchell. Mitchell provided us with a couple different things that we can bounce off each other. Certainly appreciate the questions. First question, can you talk about possible names Florida State may look for a defensive coach if a 10th assistant is approved? You've talked on this subject previously, but no one has ventured any specific names.
We had some names that were lined up that we thought had a real shot, but now they're at other schools because that 10th assistant coach thing is not going to go into effect until the 2018 season. So I think the two names I was thinking of, they would now be lateral moves, and I don't think they would do them because Florida State is not exactly offering a coordinator position here. We are certainly going to be all over that if this gets approved, and we're going to start asking around and seeing, you know, maybe who wants to retire off this staff, maybe who – because I do think that they're going to do more than just make one coaching change, right? I think you'll probably see two if that happens. In fact, I think you'd likely see – two secondary coaches.
Right.
And a corners coach and a safeties coach because of how much nickel and dime you're having to play now. So I guess I don't have any names for you right now. But look, if, you know, maybe if you can do this, I don't know how you do this. Sal Sansuri's kid is really a good recruiter for them. He's on staff. He could probably, you know, coach a position. I know he works with quarterbacks now, so you don't need necessarily that many more coaches on offense. I think you'd probably have some shuffling, though. I don't think they would just have a clean one-for-one hire.
Yeah, I don't have any specific names. I mean, I think we both had one name on the defensive side of the ball that at this point won't come to fruition, and we'll certainly follow it. And if that situation becomes pertinent. It's something that we will circle back to pretty quickly. Second question here from Mr. Goff. FSU's coaching staff is one of two, I think, in the country to go unchanged in the last 3 years. Do you think there is more value in not hiring the big-time OC and DC names that you pay a ton and expect to lose in 1 to 3 years? Do you think FSU broaches this topic in recruiting?
You know, can I throw out one name for the previous question?
Please.
I just thought about it. There's a guy at Southern Miss. His name is Tony Picaro. All right. Real Italian name. And, yeah.
Tony. Well, he and Sinceri put them together.
I got to tell you, man. Tony, when I'm talking to a lot of these, like, these kids who are under the radar, but I realize they're good and they're going to blow up recruiting-wise pretty soon. You know, like the guy who is always offering him first, it seems?
It's a great, yeah.
It's Tony, and he's actually a Florida State guy. He was on their staff like 8-9 years ago. So he's their defensive coordinator for Southern Miss. So I don't know what he makes at Southern Miss. That's a Sun Belt team or the AAC? I think they're Sun Belt, right?
I think they are Sun Belt, but not.
So they're Sun Belt or AAC, and as a coordinator, I don't know what they make there compared to like what a position coach guy makes at FSU.
Mm-hmm.
But if you needed to hire a defensive guy to coach like either linebackers or one of the two defensive back spots, I don't know if it's actually an upgrade in pay. That's a guy I would go look at because Picaro is, I think, a good coach and a hell of a recruiter. Now, as for the question you just asked me, and you know that's probably just for recruiting next only. I just thought I'd throw it out there. Do I think there's more value in not hiring the big time OC and DC names that you pay a ton and expect to lose in 1 to 3 years? Do you think if she broaches this topic in recruiting? This is like a multifold question.
Well, I'll interject real quickly. The OC, you'll never have a big time OC as long as you have Fisher as your head coach. Strictly because even if you have the title, and even if you're given a lot of the responsibilities, you being the OC won't be able to go and interview at places and truly at some spots anyway, truly be thought of as the offensive coordinator. So a big time offensive coordinator with Jimbo Fisher, I don't think that would ever really come to fruition.
This is the Kirby Smart Nick Saban problem, yes. Essentially. And you're exactly right. Now, as far as DC, Kelly was a pretty hot name 2 years ago. I mean, they had to pony up a lot of money to keep him because Auburn wanted to pay him big-time coordinator money themselves. Also, I reject the premise a little bit of this in this idea that you expect to lose these guys in 1 to 3 years. I don't know that that's necessarily true anymore. In fact, I think coordinator pay is getting so good that a lot of these guys are becoming more selective and they are staying longer. You know, how long has Venables been at Clemson now?
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Kevin Steele had his little meltdown on the sideline, right, and as they were giving up 70 to West Virginia in win. Was that 2011?
2010, I think. I could be wrong.
Well, because 2012 Orange Bowl was Florida State.
Right.
Against NIU. So the previous year would have been Clemson. Okay, so Venables has been there. This is his sixth year in Clemson? That sound right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you got it pulled up or not, but
I was actually looking at another guy. Yeah, I think he's been there 6 years. Chad Morris was at Clemson longer than I necessarily would have thought. I think you bring up a good point. With how much money is being offered, you don't have to make that risky leap. You don't have to take the first, second, or even third head coach offer. You really can be selective, and you're not going to necessarily cost your family a certain lifestyle. If you're getting $1.2 million to coach the defense at Clemson, South Carolina, you better have a hell of a job before you leave that. And it's, you know, obviously everybody wants to be a head coach, and your kind of biological coach clock is ticking to an extent as far as being an attractive head coach candidate. But you know, you can stay at a place significantly longer than maybe you could have a decade previously.
I can't sit here and tell you that the topic does not come up in recruiting. Like, I can't tell you that one staff isn't going to tell a kid, hey, you know, that coordinator you want to go play for is going to be gone next year. Right. Cause I'm sure that happens on occasion, but I don't think it's quite the issue in recruiting that people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Another corollary to this question, How do you strike the balance between cost and benefit for keeping this staff together in your mind? Like, clearly, a lot of people wanted there to be changes on this staff. I thought there should have been some. But you can't tell me that there's zero benefit of keeping the staff together with staff continuity. It's one of the very few staffs in the country, I think, that's been the exact same over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's like way on the negative side, or how do you think that balances out?
The problem with this, Bud, and this may not be directly answering your question, but I feel like there's a tipping point here that when you reach it pretty quickly, and it goes south pretty quickly.
Oh, you're right.
So, like, you have one coach on the offensive side of the ball that maybe I'm starting to be concerned with, or the defensive side of the ball. Everybody talks about where you are at linebackers. There's a ton of continuity, and that's attractive, and that's a great feeling as a coach because you don't have to go out. If you don't want to, you don't have to go out and try to find a new wide receiver, a new offensive line, a new running back, whatever the position may be. But I do think that that can be a great asset, and it can become a great liability in a pretty quick period of time.
I think you're exactly right. The Detroit Tigers, right, have had a very similar roster over the last couple of years. They signed a lot of veterans to longer-term deals. Those guys get old and they end up going downhill. I'm really cool if you have a really young staff or a really young ball club and you sign in the long-term deals. That way your young core can grow and mature together. I don't know if it's a good idea if you have a really older staff and you keep them together the whole time because you're not getting fresh and newer ideas in there. But I wonder how much that is really true now because you have these analyst positions that are opening up. You know, you have a guy like a Censuri in there. You have a guy like Damian Craig now, and I'm sure they're trying to hire a couple more analysts, I believe. But yeah, I think there's something to that. At the very least, it's an interesting offseason topic. I like this mailbag show. This is cool.
I do. I like had some great questions here. The third one from Mitchell, which I think is another solid question, both in the question that he's asking and the way he phrases it. Mitchell writes, it's Florida State, Alabama in September. Bama wins the toss, elects to defer. Keith Gavin takes a knee. Jimbo calls a run on the first play of the game, and Francois takes the snap. If we were to guess, who snapped the ball and who did he hand it to?
Ooh, okay. Well, I think who he handed it to is real easy. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be Cam Akers.
Becoming an easier and easier answer.
Are you surprised at how quickly Cam Akers started taking first-team reps?
A little bit. I am. Yes and no. I'm surprised to an extent. I'm also – how can I phrase this? Maybe I'm more surprised by – if you would have told me that Jacquez Patrick had the season that he did, particularly in the first part of the year, and he ran the way that he did, and he really changed his mentality as to how he approached carrying the ball – now, I don't know if he reverts into bad habits of practice. I'm not sure. What I do know is what I saw on Saturdays last year. And everything that we, as a fan base, or you and I, wanted to see from that kid, everything's too strong of a word, but that kid made, from what we could see, a great step forward. There was a point in time where we thought that Dalvin Cook might have actually pushed it to get back onto the field because Jacquez Patrick was carrying the ball as well as he was. I'm surprised how much of a non-factor Patrick is in this offense at times.
Yeah, I would agree with you. One of the first days of spring, there's a press conference that Fisher gives, and I forgot what day this is. And he made reference to Patrick being out. And his tone, do you remember this? His tone was kind of like, and I'll give credit to Jeff Cameron, who brought this up on the air on 97.9, but in some ways his tone kind of made me feel like, I'm not saying he's questioning a player's injury, but sort of like him to be out here. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he'll be back tomorrow, I guess. That type of, you know, maybe you could play through that type of thing. I don't know if that's going on. It just, the way he said it, and I didn't realize it until Jeff brought it up, but it was a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that surprised me a little bit. Who snaps the ball? Oh, man, I wish I was in the training room so I could actually tell you how Everly is progressing from his hip surgery. I'm going to go Bavion.
Well,
and I wonder if the head coach and the offensive line coach are going to agree on this.
Good point.
Because I think there's been times in the past. Like, somebody told me that Trickett wanted to move, what's his name? The left tackle they moved to center 3 years ago.
Cam?
Yeah. Somebody told me that Trickett had wanted to move Cam to center like 4 or 5 games before that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Fisher did not want him to. And then they finally did it and it worked. And then there's been other times where Fisher has wanted to do something and another coach has been reluctant to do it. And you know who typically wins in this is the head coach.
Right.
But there's been times where Fisher's been right as far as, hey, no, we need to hold off on this. This guy is not ready to move. So I don't want to make it seem like Jimbo's an impediment there in the move. I wonder which coach would be in favor of Everly and which coach would be in favor of Babeon if they do have disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that Fisher might want the beef in there.
How much is Baselli in the equation?
I think he's in the equation. I mean, he played not well, but he played as a freshman some. I just don't know what Baselli gives you over Everly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not much bigger.
Right.
If you're going to swap out somebody who's not Everly, it's got to be because of girth.
Right.
I think.
And if you're going to go with certainly Bavion's more inexperienced than Baselli, but if you're going to go young and inexperienced, I would think you'd go with the guy that's a little more physically capable and probably has a little bit higher ceiling.
I totally agree. It also might matter if it's Dickerson back.
Yeah.
Off the ACL. How is Minshew playing? All those things I think matter with your combination. It's not just the center.
So, Bud, we've been doing these for a while. I think this will be maybe the 7th or 8th year that we've covered this team. So as part of that, we have are able to look back at things that we've talked about before. And once, I can't remember if it was 3 or 4 years ago. I feel like it was it wasn't Wilder and Freeman because that was just too damn easy. But there was a season where I pined to see a 2 running back set a lot. And I wonder if maybe this would be the year where you can really see that with Jacques Patrick. I'm not saying that he's going to move to fullback per se, but I wonder if you can't convince him to play a role that otherwise he wouldn't be opened or consider because you've seen the emergence of a ridiculous talented freshman. And, you know, maybe at a point in time you're able to convince him of an opportunity with what they did with Lonnie Pryor. I'm just curious about that. That's one thing that I will watch because if Jacques Patrick is a talent, I don't know if there's questions about his effort. I don't know if there's questions about his toughness, but that's too good of a piece to just sit there on the sidelines. So
and a unique piece,
a very unique piece with a unique skill set. So if he's not playing because you feel like you have a absolute freak of nature, then very curious as to what your kind of plan B and C with Patrick is. Because you can't sign that – well, you shouldn't be able to sign a kid that talented and just let him sit there and rot on the roster.
I totally agree. By the way, I ran into one of my buddies in the scouting industry who is from Mississippi, and he said, is Cam Akers starting yet for Florida State? And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to. And he's like, he's already better than Dalvin. And I was like, all right, Mississippi guy. Pump the brakes a little bit here. Like, yeah, he's probably the best player in Mississippi in a while, but I don't think he's already better than Dalvin. But – Let me throw this out there. Patrick's always caught the ball well. He's a big guy. If he's willing to block and knows who to block, he can definitely absorb a blitzer, right,
mm-hmm.
without getting driven back really far. Akers has never pass protected before in his life because he's been a quarterback. Because
he's been a quarterback, right.
Is it out of the question to think that maybe Patrick could be used more on third down? I mean, he's not a traditional third down scat back,
mm-hmm.
but you have seen some teams, including the Patriots, by the way, who've used a little bit bigger guy, not a speedster, but can blocks well and catches the ball well, like a Kevin Falk, the Patriots use. Or some teams go a little bigger on third down because it's more of a pass protector role, and you can slip the ball out to him some. He's not really a speed guy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested in that.
Something to watch. I think it's a good point, and look, there's a lot of intriguing things with this roster. I think we've come more and more to the conclusion, probably, you know, certainly a lot of time to play out, but it looks like we know who the starting running back will be. How they use the second 5-star on their roster will be a a storyline to watch. And you know, look, Amir Rasul's a talented player. You've got a lot of options there. Really excited to see what they do with the offensive backfield in general.
Now, on Akers starting, I want to give us a little bit of an out here. This is 2 weeks of spring practice.
Yeah.
From what I've been told, he's been very impressive with whatever they've installed. But I know their install has been somewhat limited as far as what they can actually rep in pads because they've had a lot of guys out and hurt. So this is contingent on him continuing to master other elements of the offense as they get installed throughout the rest of spring, in summer, and in the fall. So far, so good. I can't tell you he's mastered the entire offense yet, though. But it's such great news that he's in for spring. I mean, that guy, that's the kind of kid, I think, if he had not enrolled for spring, you might look back if he was like a fall enrollee, and then maybe you have some things where you're like, damn it, if only this kid had been here for spring, maybe we win an early game that, you know, by a small margin that we ended up losing or something like that.
Right. Final point to Mitchell's question, bud. He asked about Florida State, Alabama in September. And to this, I will move into reminding people as to how fortunate we are to be able to work with Madison Social. I'm hesitant to mention this, but I did see them kind of put a vague reference to it on Twitter, so I think I'm okay moving forward. I've been trying to help them with a little bit of a project, and again, I don't think they'd have a problem with me mentioning this. Madison Social is very much efforting to kind of recreate what they did with the Ole Miss game, as far as having an on-site kind of a private lot tailgate type of situation. I can tell you that it is laughably expensive to rent a parking lot in downtown Atlanta, and your options because of where that stadium is and all the development around it are pretty limited. But
I got a spot for you.
We'll certainly keep you up to date. What is that?
It's there's like a large empty spot. Yes. It's on 85.
Yes, we will be tailgating under the collapsed bridge.
But not smoking crack.
Hashtag Atlanta. Yes, no crack will be consumed by either of us. You guys can act in your own way that you wish. But yeah, so that's something we'll keep you up to date with. That would be a hell of a lot of fun. I know you were able to go to that. It's a great opportunity. The private bathrooms are a huge deal at any type of situation. I would only tell you that private bathrooms at this particular situation are even more valuable because Mercedes-Benz Stadium is look, I love Atlanta, and I think a lot of people say things about Atlanta that aren't necessarily true, but the neighborhood that surrounds that stadium is probably the roughest neighborhood in the city. So you don't necessarily want to get drunk and then wander off in the woods to try to find a place to pee is my point here. So Madison Social, everything they do is first class. And if we're able to put an event like that together, you guys will certainly hear about it, and we'll do everything we can to make it as successful as a tailgate could possibly be.
Absolutely. I've been a great supporter and sponsor of the podcast. You see, we got a shout out from a congressman.
I did see. We had a congressman just mentioned, not even added us, just a general tweet. Been listening to the Nolcast with Ingram and Bud, and all I can think about is enjoying a little bit of Madison Social and some Louisiana hot sauce. Congressman, damn, that is awesome. That is fantastic stuff. We certainly appreciate your listenership, and don't necessarily love all the auto political bots that responded to us, but appreciate anybody, whether you've been elected as a congressional representative or not. Taking the time to mention us and our sponsors on Twitter. So just part of a wonderful, engaged audience that we're fortunate enough to have. And thank you to anybody that takes the time to note their appreciation in any type of social form of the Nolcast.
By the way, I am extremely glad that I am not in politics, because the like Twitter bots that automatically reply to any congressional tweet are now in our mentions, and it's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I've got like a 30 reply electoral college debate spawning in my mentions, and I'm like, untag me. I don't care.
Well, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool, regardless of what follows. And certainly, again, anybody that has the time to note the Nullcast on Twitter or any other form of social media is very much appreciated from the two of us. So, Bud, we will go from a congressman in Northwest Florida to a listener in China. Mr. Ross Norman asks, who are the quarterback recruits Florida State ought to be looking for in both the 2018 and 2019 classes?
So 2018, well, first of all, let's start 2019. Grant Gunnell is the FSU top target. He's visiting soon. I would not rule out a commitment. He is one of the most talented quarterbacks in the country, regardless of age. He's out of St. Pius in Houston. And I think Florida State has a great chance to get him. A&M apparently thinks they're getting him. I am skeptical on A&M getting him, especially because I don't know what's going to happen with A&M's coaching staff, but I do know that Jimbo Fisher has basically a decade-long extension and is going to be the coach for, barring something that's absolutely insane, the entirety of Glennon's career. So that's always encouraging. 2018, we talked about Dorian Thompson-Robinson, right, recently, and that was – I know you mentioned that we had talked about that, so I appreciate him listening. You also have Emory Jones, who I spoke with today at the Under Armour All-America Camp. He is an Ohio State commit. Told me he's 100%, 110, or whatever to Ohio State. But my Georgia sources tell me that he recently took a secret visit to Georgia. Didn't want that to get out. That got out. He's also visiting, I believe, Florida State for the spring game, Florida, and Alabama. Now, I asked him about Florida State like I asked him about all his schools. But it's an FSU podcast. So we'll talk a little FSU here. And he said he likes Jimbo Fisher's pro-style offense. He likes what they do with him. He likes how things that Jimbo Fisher does with his offense translate to the NFL. And so that's attractive to him. Now, he's currently committed to basically the exact opposite of Jimbo Fisher's offense, which is what they run at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. An extremely good college offense. Probably doesn't have quite as much translation to the NFL. But still committed to Ohio State. I asked him, I said, at some point, you're going to have to completely shut this down, right? And I applaud you for checking out all your options to make sure you made the right decision, because it's the only time you have leverage. But when do you think you're going to know, hey, I'm definitely 100% sticking with Ohio State. I'm shutting this down so I can recruit others to the Buckeyes, or flip? And he told me he thinks he's going to know soon, like after he takes these visits. So that's one to watch, Emory Jones, within the upcoming month. By the way, breaking news here. It won't be breaking by the time this publishes, but Teron Vincent, the number one defensive tackle in the country, committed to Ohio State today over Florida State. That's one that I think Florida State thought they were I think they thought they were in, and they certainly were. They just, you know, there's no prize for second place, basically. Right. Yeah. So that's unfortunate for FSU. They already have Robert Cooper, though, who's not quite as good, but he's still an excellent prospect. And other QBs. I'm trying to think who else they're in on. As far as like right now, like they haven't offered Joe Milton. Okay. They haven't offered Arthur Tatowski, the Miami commit. I think Milton's going to go to Florida, probably. I think based on their offer pattern, they don't seem to be all that worried about it,
mm-hmm.
right? Like if they were worried that they're going to miss on these top kids so badly, they'd be throwing out other offers.
Yeah, there's no shotgun offers. You're not seeing a scattering trying to cover yourself. I think that's a good point. I think they're comfortable with where they are. You don't ever want to not pay attention to this year because of who you like in years down the road. That's a great way to find yourself in a bad situation, particularly at a place like quarterback. But I do think that the kid out of Gorman that we've talked about, DTR, as we'll refer to him moving forward, is who they want in this year's class. And then, it feels like we've been talking about the Gunnell kid for about a year or so, which for a 2019 prospect is quite the statement. So normally when Fisher decides who he wants, he decides who he wants, and more times than not, he ends up getting that. So we'll have to watch that if they're not able to close with the kids. Obviously, look, Robinson's going to be a hell of a get. Maybe we sound like that's more of a sure thing than we should. There's going to be a lot of competition there. That's not somebody that is a shoe-in by any means, but he very much appears to be, firmly cemented at top spot in the quarterback board for now.
Absolutely. And by the way, I called him Glennon a little bit ago. Apologies for that. Let's see. What else we got going on recruiting-wise? Kyler McMichael is a name to know for the cornerback board. FSU likes him at corner, he said. He's like a 6'1", 200-pound corner out of Greater Atlanta Christian up here. Got to see him today. Looked pretty good. He's a little thicker in your traditional corner, but I do like him. I don't know what he's rated. He's probably a 4-star type. Christian Armstrong, 6'5", 330-pound offensive tackle. He's going to be coming down for FSU's spring game. I like FSU's chances to land him, and Florida State needs to get as many offensive tackle bodies as they can. So I do like that. He told me that he's not going to be able to go to Auburn because that's the same day as FSU's spring game, apparently. And he's not going to Penn State because that is the same day as his prom. But those are his other two top schools. And I asked him, did you ask your prom date in some really creative way? And he said, no, I texted her. So nice. I like that.
I'm somewhat envious that that's an option to be able to.
Because now you've seen that these promposals, these kids, creative stuff.
Seriously, that is not the road you want to walk down, gentlemen. Don't go losing your mind as to who you take to prom, and certainly I would not advise you to put a whole lot of effort into it. But hey, if it's fun, don't let me sit here and rain on anybody's parade. The McMichael kid out of Greater Atlanta Christian, that'll be something that we monitor. GAC is always had a little bit of talent running around it, but they seem to be producing high-level players at a much more consistency than I remember historically. But what does Florida State have, 4 or 5 ridiculously talented kids out of Louisiana that are either making their way or have made their way onto campus?
Yeah, it looks like some kids are doing a little trip across the Southeast with Vincent Sanders, who's a trainer type in that area. Previously involved with Devontae Smith, who you might recall, we discussed Devontae Smith's recruitment and the reason why we thought he was not going anywhere but Alabama, and also Cheyenne Carter. If you're a longtime listener, you can put some pieces together here. However, you're not gonna turn down these kids coming to campus, and they're certainly elite level kids. Devontae Lee, Devontae spelled the same way with the DEVONTA, is a really nice 2019 receiver. Ishmael Softser, I've got to see him a couple times now. Built like a fire hydrant, but very powerful defensive lineman. Going to be an elite kid just because he's not the longest, but he's got elite level burst and strength, and he obviously plays low because he's not that tall. Trey Palmer, who's another promising 2019 receiver. For some reason, Dennis Briggs out of the Kissimmee, Florida area is with these guys, mm-hmm. or at least just visiting at the same time and took a group photo with them. So maybe he's somehow tied into that training group. I'm not sure. And then Steven Sims, who's a 2019 receiver / DB out of Slidell, Louisiana. So if you guys are real big recruitniks and you want to get started on that 2019 class, which does not sign for like 26 more months, please go ahead and hit that.
There you go. Some names to add to your own personal board. Final individual kid, Zamir White, looking like he's more headed to Athens, Georgia than the upstate of South Carolina.
Yeah, I spoke to some, and for those who don't know, this is the number one running back in the country. Zamir White going to Georgia instead of Clemson is certainly a benefit to Florida State because FSU does not play Georgia. They do play Clemson. And you know who else does play Georgia?
Yes, a certain school that wears orange and blue.
Right. So, yeah, that's good for FSU. By the way, you mentioned don't let a 2019 kid scare off a 2018 kid, mm-hmm. right? There was a big Twitter discussion today. Did FSU, you know, Lorenzo Lingard?
Yeah.
The Miami commit.
Yeah.
Who's an elite level back. A lot of people compare him to Todd Gurley. There was a discussion with FSU fans and Miami fans that if FSU had not taken Cam Akers as well as Dalvin Cook's little brother, James right. Cook, reclassifying to the 2018 class or to 2018 from 2019, that Lingard would probably be in FSU's class. And I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, FSU made the right decision. You got Cam Akers to sign. You got him in early. He's, you know, elite, talented running back, bird in hand, you know?
No, yeah. Yeah. Look, you recruit Cam Akers, you sign Cam Akers, you really don't worry about who he scares off. And that's that's just, there's going to be a byproduct to any decision made. All, you know, all actions have responses and consequences, but you don't not recruit a potential transcendent talent because you're worried about prospects that he might run off. And more times than not, those situations kind of resolve themselves. We'll move back into a question or two here, Bud. John K. writes, and this is an interesting one, much like Louisiana hot sauce has improved the null cast, would it be permissible and a good use of resources for Florida State to be more deliberate with their approach with certain high schools? Deliberate. And for John, deliberate means the boosters would potentially donate $100,000 to the high school boosters club of 6 to 8 selected schools around the state. Florida State coaches and staff would hold multiple clinics per year to help develop coaches at these schools. These schools would run a simplified scheme of Florida State's FSU education and nutrition. Students would have internship programs to help at these schools over the summer with former Florida State players who would want to coach have a potential first job.
All right. I'm going to read this to myself again. This is a long question.
I like it.
I like how they shouted out our sponsor in the question. Yeah,
absolutely. A good tie-in. And I like there's a lot of things here that wouldn't fly, but it's a good idea. And it's almost reminds me similar of if, like, soccer clubs creating youth academies, basically, is what it sounds more like what you're doing. Schools wouldn't probably change their scheme based off, I mean, look, if you get enough money, anybody will do anything. But first of all, you're not going to be able to just donate $100K to various booster groups without running into some trouble. Florida State coaches and staff would hold multiple clinics per year. This is kind of similar to what we talked about in the past. This, in a much more watered down version, has happened. I mean, you've had, I mentioned Auburn. Auburn, if you go back and you watch any of the classic Auburn games from the 1990s, it is ridiculous defensive recruit after ridiculous defensive recruit stemming from Dillard High School in Fort Lauderdale. There was a reason. They had an in, and also they employed their coaches in all kinds of various methods. Everything that I'm aware of, at least that I referenced, is legal. I'm not accusing them of a dirty pool per se, but that is about the most probable part of this question that you would be able to enact, at least under the current rules of college football.
All right, I'm going to rank the probably like best to worst ideas part about this.
It's a good question, man. We're not belittling your question.
I'm just trying to think. I'm trying to almost get to a place where this could actually work, right? Number one, you can't really do it publicly, right? So, like, Florida State boosters cannot be dropping $100,000 on a high school because if you can do it publicly, that implies you can do it legally. And if a smart high school is just going to turn to, you know, they're going to turn and be like, UF.
Right.
How about $100,000 from you too?
Yeah.
And then that way you have a $200,000 donation.
Or $125,000. We'll let you put you right to the front of the line.
I like the way you think. All right. So that part probably not cool. 6 to 8 schools also get you close. I mean, that's like what, $750,000 a year? Or are we talking about like a one time donation? I'm not sure. Multiple clinics per year to help develop coaches at these schools. That's a lot of time investment. Also, I think NCAA rules prevent you from visiting schools at certain times of the year. So I don't know if Florida State can like send their staff to a school that many times in a year without running afoul of the NCAA visit rules. Next line. These schools run a simplified scheme similar to FSU's. Actually, I'll tell you this. You know how I talked about Jimbo Fisher's coaching clinic a couple weeks back, how he gave the clinic talk for Nike in Orlando with a bunch of other college coaches there? One of the reasons, aside from the fact they have Nike endorsement contracts, so they have to go do these, like you know, they're mandated by contract to do them, that these college coaches go to these high school coaching seminars where you have thousands of high school coaches from all around the state in a big ballroom in a, you know, big Orlando hotel, is because they want to help out high school coaches. High school coaches are the lifeline for these college coaches, but they also want to talk about how good what they run is and maybe encourage you to run some of that at your high school level so that in some way it increases the chance that when they sign a kid from whatever school, whatever, you know, pick out of the hat, random school, they've at least been using some of the techniques that you've been using,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think that that's certainly already happening somewhat. You're not doing personalized coaching camps for these guys. FSU education and nutrition students would have an internship program at these schools over the summer. I think it's a really good idea. I don't know how feasible that is. Former FSU players who went to coach would have a first job there. Potentially possible, but also potentially threatening. If I'm a high school coach, I don't necessarily want like Lawrence Timmons coming to be my linebackers coach, because very quickly, if Timmons certainly knows a whole lot about football, he's played a decade in the NFL now, but he may not be the best coach starting out. That would disrupt a coaching staff. So to break this down fully, it's a really great idea.
He also might get offered a job before you would as well.
You know the better idea here? Anonymously pay the coach $100,000 to get the best player off his team if you need to do so.
Yes, that's a great idea. I don't think anybody's ever done that before, but I'm glad that we were able to come up with that one.
Or use an anonymous real estate trust to buy someone's house at way over market value, and thus, if you go into Zillow in certain parts of South Florida and you look at a certain street, there's like a hot spot, like, you know, of why is this?
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I mentioned something similar and got a call from somebody last time I did as to, Ingram, let's not go into quite the details that we did. So
the Zillow bomb?
I was going to sit out the real estate part of that question, but don't get it confused. That happens as well.
So. There's a lot of streets in Miami. I don't think people are going to figure this out.
Well, there's not streets in Miami anyway, and there's streets in Southwest Georgia and everywhere else. Yeah, that is a just personally, that's one of the more favorite avenues of a lot of schools.
Amari Gaynor, 4-star linebacker, got an opening invite from Tallahassee, has released a top six, Ingram.
Okay.
I'm okay with top six.
Top sixes are manageable.
Now, actually, I love top 20s now because, and I used to hate them, but now because I'm doing so much video with SB Nation, I take and I have the keys to all the Facebook pages, all 86 in the network. So if a kid drops a top 20 and I have a video on it.
Right.
I'm putting that on all 20 pages.
Absolutely.
But for realism purposes, I think everybody has 100% crystal balled or whatever to Florida State and Samar Gaynor, your Tallahassee Childs linebacker. Really impressive player. 6'3", 210, long, agile. I think he's becoming more physical, trusting his game more. I've seen him a couple years in a row at Jimbo's camp, got to see his game evolve. That's been fun to see. Other teams in the top, UCLA, Texas, Alabama, Auburn, and Miami. I think he visited Alabama recently. I know Lorenzo Lingard, the running back, was talking to him about coming to visit Miami and how Miami's a 40-year decision or whatever. It may be. Who knows? I still like FSU's chances there for sure. He's going to visit Auburn pretty soon. He says he's taken all 5 of his official visits. He tweeted shortly thereafter. So that – to me, he says that he may not be a guy who's going to pop real early, but I do think he's the type of talent that you save a spot for in your class.
So he would official to the other 5 and unofficial Florida State. I mean, it makes sense. You don't – if you have the opportunity to take an official visit to L.A., I would certainly
– right. Well, he may cut the list down before then.
Yeah, that's true.
The chance that all those schools have a great year is probably low, and I'm guessing somebody will get dropped off that list eventually, or that it may even change some.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Sam Pinckney, receiver out of South Carolina – made a return visit to FSU.
That's the kid. That's the South Carolina kid that I was talking to you about before we started recording.
He's got some serious ball skills, man. Like I somebody asked me, is this kid a take? I think absolutely is. I'd recommend pulling up his huddle. Looks on huddle. I mean, I haven't seen him in person, but looks to have legitimate size. I think he's got a whole lot of talent.
So I just wanted to pull this up as a geographic point of reference, which historically I put a lot of stock into. Whether that's a good idea or not can be debated. So he's out of Greenwood, South Carolina. Greenwood, Bud, very close to the iconic 96 South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Great name town there. In the upstate, looks like he's probably about 45 minutes outside of Columbia. He's damn near halfway between – from a distance, not exactly as the crow flies, but about halfway between Clemson and Columbia. Looks like he's about 30 minutes into the state of South Carolina or so. Florida State historically always had a great presence in South Carolina. Obviously, you're going to be fighting Clemson and all that they have going for them, and a relatively new staff in Columbia as well. But, I mean, if you look back at the – and look, things have changed. But if you look back at some of the more talented players in the 90s, Florida State used to feast in that state. D-Feaster, pardon the pun there, Boulware Brothers, Chris Hope was out of Rock Hill. Just an absolute ton of talent out of that state. Not so much in quantity, but quality. What you can get out of South Carolina is pretty remarkable. Not a place that's ever going to produce, or at least rarely produces, more than, you know, 10 or 11 elite top-tier kids a year. But it's a place that Florida State has done well, and certainly, you know, it's not as though you're going to have to explain to them your program, what's it about. Or a lot of kids want to get away, but want to play in a rivalry game. And Clemson and Florida State has been one of college football's best rivalries over the past 3 or 4 years. So you've got a lot to sell to that kid, and that will be somebody that we watch.
I think he's actually this kid who I was wondering who the hell it was today at the Under Armour camp.
Go.
Because he tweeted, got my invite to the Under Armour camp, and there was a tall dude there who I didn't know what his name was, and I shot a lot of clips of him, and it's hard to figure out everybody's name. You got 150 dudes, but if that's him, I was very impressed. I'm going to check up on that. If so, I'll probably have some clips available soon.
I believe we have covered what we had on our list here. So this has been fun. This has been a whole hell of a lot of fun, actually. Hopefully the product is reflective of the conversation that we've had. Hopefully people enjoy this. We will try to do more of these. It's not logistically feasible for us to be at the same spot all too often throughout the year, but it certainly makes conversation easier. And having had the opportunity to do it, it's something that I would like to try to do more frequently. So this has been really enjoyable, Bud. Hope you have enjoyed it as well, and hopefully the listeners will enjoy this and be able to have a nice, solid, and pretty significant piece of content to break up a Monday or Tuesday at work, or commute to work, or however it is that that you as a listener choose to consume the Nolcast.
Good show, man.
Really good show.
An hour and 28.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. We'll hand this over to our producer, Judson, who'll cut it up. Maybe we'll drop this in segments, but it's been great. Would ask always that people share this as much as you feel comfortable. Anytime you can interact with our sponsors is fantastically appreciated from our point of view, even if it just means liking a tweet, if it means when we talk to the people at Madison Social, not to be long-winded here, but when we talk to the people at Madison Social, they just rave at the amount of unsolicited feedback they've received, whether that means that you mention to somebody when you go in there, whether you send them an email. It's been remarkable over the course of our partnership with them. I realize you can't just drop an email to, you know, info@LouisianaHotSauce or whatever it is, but you're more limited in platforms. But the feedback that you guys give has meant a lot to us, has meant a lot to the progression of the podcast, and just want to take a moment to thank you for that, and it is very much appreciated. So, Bud, we will try to get together the first part of next week, trying to be consistent, and do these, you know, once a week, once every 10 days or so. And your efforts as a listenership and engaging with our sponsors are the reason we're able to do this. So thank you again. Hopefully you've enjoyed this, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon.
We are out.